Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. My name's Joe Harvey. I'm joined by Chris Hill, who's a normal pundit on this. We've pulled in someone else on this. Well, no, you're a regular. We're accustomed to hearing your voice. A man whose voice we're not accustomed to hearing is that of Charlie Beckett. Charlie, how are things?
Well, yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Always happy to talk about some rugby. I love it. Absolute out and out Norse. So I'll talk about rugby all day. So I'm excited.
That's right. I'm sure there's some line-out questions coming at some point. There's going to be some stuff there.
Bit of breakdown clearing, some mauling, bit of scrum. Let's get into the nitty-gritty, lads.
Let's definitely do that. And obviously, because one of the reasons we're doing this podcast is because the end of the club season has actually finally happened, which a lot of people probably didn't think it ever would for a very long time. Didn't look like it was actually going to finish. We had a Prem final at Twickenham. I've forgotten the score off the top of my head. I think it was 19 points to 13, sorry, that Exeter beat Wasps at. That was a wet day. Exeter deserve a champions, Chris?
That was a wet day. Must have been the biggest understatement for you, Joe, because, yeah, it looks horrendous on television. Like, and it, when it looks bad on TV, you know it's probably equally as, or if not more, horrendous when you're in the stadium. But, yeah, I think in terms of the game, yeah, I thought Exeter controlled it well. I think they were dominant where they needed to be at scrum time and in the line out. I think, you know, because I rewatched it on Sunday because I was prioritised by our beloved Liverpool on Saturday night. So I rewatched, but I switched it on before Liverpool kicked off, and it was the moment where Wasps had the option to go for the post at 13-10 or go to the corner to try and win the game. And, you know, those are the details we'll get looked at a lot more. But I think in terms of the way Exeter controlled the game and those weather conditions, I think they probably just about edge it. But take nothing away from Wasps. I thought Lee Blackett was brilliant in his post-match interview saying, you know, credit to Exeter, but we've come a long way. And you have to give credit for where Wasps were probably around this time last year to where they finished up last weekend. So, yeah, it wasn't the best final in the world due to the conditions, but I think Exeter deservedly had the Premiership title to the European Champions Cup.
Yeah, definitely. Charlie, obviously, you played against Exeter, pretty much what was like a first-string Exeter team as well, wasn't it, down at Sandy Park? Ground out, you know, you ground that one out. It was actually quite a close game. And what was it like playing against that team that was, you know, that went on to achieve what they did this season?
Yeah, it was, you look at the names on the team sheet and it would have been easy to be a little bit intimidated, especially like we had, I think our only real regulars we had were Ruin and Billy 12, really. So you look at it, go, we sent a young side down there. I think probably the whole world was expecting a cricket score, but I think once you get on a pitch, it's just 15 on 15. And we went, like, there's no secret. If you watch the game, I don't think it's hard to work out what our tactics were. We went just to spoil it. We weren't going there to play rugby, because if we went and played rugby against them, we weren't going to do well. They're the best team in England, best team in Europe. We went there just to try and spoil things. And we did a good job of that. But what was very evident was you switch off for 10 seconds against them, make one error and they score. So, for example, I remember really clearly, I actually watched it from the sideline because I was in the sin bin. But straight after half time, we had a great clearance kick down to the bottom left corner, just outside their 22. Stuart Hogg picks it up, should be tackled into touch, and we should be our line out on their 22. One missed tackle on their 22. They scored two phases later under our sticks, and they're just that clinical. And you look at them, you see it against two very, very different finals, like that European Champions Cup final, go down as an all-time classic. Like, to watch that as a neutral was just a pleasure. And then you watch the final against Wasps, and it absolutely won't go down as a classic, but it was just intriguing in other ways. And I think that's the thing with Exeter. They're stereotypically, you think they can only win if they're scrumming and mauling and driving. But actually, when they got into a gunfight with Racing the week before, they still came out on top. So they're adding strings to their bow of being a team who can win pretty and win ugly. And that's a scary thing to face. Now, the only thing I would say is, with the final, as Chris said, you look at where Wasps have come. Since Lee Blackett took over, they've got Richard Blaze in as forwards coach, who I've worked with at Leicester, and then Sarah's worked with England, and we both can't speak highly enough of Blaze. He's absolutely brilliant as a coach. And you look at the difference they've had from when there was the restart to now. I think if I was a Wasps fan, I'd be very excited, because they're very much the start of their journey. Now, I'm not saying Chiefs are at the end of theirs, but they've come to the culmination of 10 years from Championship to Champions Cup. Wasps are at the start of a regeneration, I think. With the coaches and the players they've got, I think they're going to be a very hard team to beat next season and for the coming seasons, and with there or thereabouts. come this time next year, or whatever time next year the final is. I don't know when the final is going to be next year, but at the final next year, they'll be there again, I think. And it's exciting, nice to be a Wasps fan, but you can't begrudge Chiefs a moment of their success. I think everyone who isn't a Chiefs fan, I think Chiefs is kind of their second team. Everyone likes them, don't they? Everyone likes Rob Baxter, and the job he's done there is just phenomenal. So I was very pleased to see them win a double. But yeah, I think it's exciting time to be a Wasps fan as well.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously, congratulations to Exeter, commiserations to Wasps, and I think my socks are still drying out somewhere. And but anyway, basically, the end of the domestic season means that we now have a lot of internationals to look forward to, and a lot more than I think I realised until I looked at the fixtures the other day, which was quite concerning. Obviously, one less because of some boys liking a pint. And we're starting off this weekend, and we're going to start off with something that happened last weekend, which was Scotland women drawing 13 all with France women, which therefore has given the Red Roses another Six Nations Championship, which means they're going to this weekend against Italy looking for a Grand Slam. Charlie, what was the family group chat like when you realised that Sarah had won another Six Nations?
It was obviously all very congratulations, well done, but it was kind of a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? Because you expect when you win a Six Nations, you think you'd be watching the game and celebrating the final whistle. Like, obviously, we were watching the Scotland game and we knew the significance of it. It's a weird one, isn't it? You're like, yay, but there's not really anything to celebrate in that moment. I think, fingers crossed, they go and beat Italy on Sunday and get the Grand Slam. I think that'll be where the real celebration comes in, and be very happy then. But obviously, over the moon for Est and for all the girls, another well-deserved Six Nations win. But it's strange when you win a Six Nations, you haven't played a Six Nations game for 6 months. So I think they're all, from what I speak to Sarah about, they're all very excited to get on the pitch this weekend and try and bring that Grand Slam home.
Yeah, I suppose you're probably one of, if not the best person to ask about. It's, you know, obviously during lockdown, there wasn't much of a horizon for anything for a significant period of time. How much work was Sarah? And obviously, you'd imagine that she's a microcosm of the entire squad. How much work was she putting in to be ready for when rugby did return?
Mate, I can't speak highly enough of how hard S worked in lockdown. Like, we were at home, and funny, we laughed, like, we were both at home, both training, and you'd think we'd train together, but we have very different schedules. I think she spoke about this on a podcast before. So I'm used to training early doors, because that's what in men's rugby we do. But because in the girls' game with Quinn still, they have to cater for not everyone being full-time, and they wait for people after work. She's used to training in the afternoon. So we kind of crossed paths at about 1 o'clock when I'd finished up my training and she'd start into. We had conservatory at home where we were lucky enough to have some weights in the watt bike, and we kind of crossed paths at that point. But no, she worked so hard, like just killing herself, running on the watt bike, doing all the weights, doing a rehab, a prehab, everything. Like, she worked incredibly hard, and was a lot. What the girls were very good at, England and Quinn's, were getting on Zoom calls for like group yoga, group conditioning, group, like keeping each other, like the team feeling, which is really good to see. And they all worked incredibly hard. I think you can see that with now Allianz Premier 15s, how that's come back. Like, so they've obviously got the adapted rules, because unfortunately the clubs haven't got the funding, they can't afford COVID testing like the men's Premiership clubs can. They've come back with these adapted rules, which have just meant the ball in play time is astronomical. Like, it's huge. Like, some of the numbers S is telling about on their GPS, she's running over 10-11k a game, which is crazy. And actually, it's been for really good rugby to watch. Now, I think they're all very much looking forward to, hopefully, fingers crossed, after the pandemic, getting back to normal rugby. And obviously the Six Nations is back to full rules this weekend, but I think you can see they've obviously put in a lot of work with how fit they've all come back, and the quality of games is testament to the work all the girls did across the whole league in the lockdown.
Yeah, of course. And Chris, obviously the adapted rules have kind of a knock-on effect, because obviously we do a lot in the national leagues and we talk a lot about the community game. And obviously you did a piece that went out yesterday of the day of recording, so that would be Wednesday for anyone, because obviously this is going to be released on Friday. You did a piece about the return of the game pretty much below the level of one. Do you think those rules could maybe give a basis for us as to like what a return for people that aren't getting paid full-time to do it or aren't playing at an elite level? Do you think it could be a guideline?
I hope so. I really hope you're right, Joe. I mean, you know, is it? I think you put in your interview with Katie D on the Clean earlier in the week that you said, I think there was two fixtures so far out of how many there have been in the Allianz Premier 15s. I think we've had three rounds so far that have fallen by the wayside because of COVID. And, you know, obviously you never want to see a game be affected because of health reasons, but I think that's actually quite a positive statistic so far. Because there has only been two games which have had to be postponed. The question is, if that continues and we get to round 8 or round 9 of the Allianz Premier 15s, then the statistic is still pretty low whether we can take that forward into National League rugby and university rugby and community rugby, because we're all absolutely desperate. Everyone that seems to be talking about rugby at the moment is desperate for the community game to come back in particular. I know kind of Eddie Jones has been pretty vocal on it over the last couple of weeks. He's been doing his media conferences. He has been asked the question about putting smiles on people's faces at the moment and how England's senior team and the Red Roses can help with that. And, you know, I think he even said today rugby has become a bit of a laughing stock, and we need to change that perception. And we all hope that maybe what the Allianz Premier 15s have done, they've taken the lead and they are the example and they are the litmus test, if you like, to see whether this can work. And I really, really do hope that is the case. And in January, we do have some competitive rugby coming back.
Yeah, certain. Obviously, COVID has already struck with the Women's Six Nations. Ireland's game against France, despite these amazing efforts that went into it to try and get it on because of different COVID rules in different countries, unfortunately, that has had to be cancelled because of some cases in the France camp, which is a tremendous shame, especially as France is one of the kind of one of the bigger teams in the women's competition, and Ireland are a growing powerhouse within that. So we hope everyone involved with that is okay. And maybe hopefully some people even enjoy a weekend off. Never know. And obviously, I think myself, Chris, Charlie, probably more so than myself and Chris, are wishing the Red Roses all the best this weekend in Parma, which I suppose brings us to Super Saturday, which is a bit confusing for me. You know, I'm used to that being a football thing. But it's is it Super Sunday? Is it Super Saturday? I don't know.
Super Sunday normally for the football, isn't it?
Oh, see, I only got Sky a few months ago. I don't really know what's going on. But so obviously, I'm going to try and remember the exact order of the games that we're playing, because obviously I think it's probably better to do it that way. Wales are playing Scotland in a game that ultimately means pretty little in the grand scheme of things. And we'll kind of just gloss over that one. And then after that, it's Italy versus England. The squad for England has been released. And I'm going to start with a very niche specialist question for a debutant. Charlie, how good is Johnny Hill?
Oh, he's very good, mate. I was very pleased to see him in the side when I saw it about an hour ago. More than that, I'm just happy to see in one position at least Eddie's picking on form. I don't know what poor Ben Spencer has to do, to be honest with you, which I'm sure we'll go on to at some point. But I think since the restart, Johnny Hill has been the form second row in the Premiership and his European exploits as well. Playing against him and Johnny Gray that night was really like you grow up, and as a professional, you want to play against the best, and they're two of the best in the world at the moment. So it was great to test yourself against them and play against them. He's very, very good, and I'm very excited to see how he goes on that next step up on the international stage this weekend.
Yeah, of course. And Chris, Charlie just mentioned him there, Ben Spencer, not involved with the squad at all. Willie Hines is only out because of injury. Ben Youngs will make his 100th appearance for England, and then on the bench it's Dan Robson. And as Charlie said, what does Ben Spencer have to do?
I was baffled by that. I mean, I think Spencer and Robson are the two names that we've been looking out for to go sort of with Youngs as the trio of scrum halves going forward. And we know Youngs is been going to start, get that 100 cap, but it'd be really nice. And, you know, Ben Youngs is a class player. He's done so well for England over the 10 years. I think he's earned those 100 caps, which is a staggering amount of caps worn in that space of time with injuries and whatever. But I'd personally like to see Dan Robson get a few caps, get a few starts under his belt during this Autumn Nations Cup, because he absolutely deserves it. And if Ben Spencer was in there, as well as Charlie quite rightly says, I'd 100% get him involved as well, because I think those two are the two best scrum halves in the country at the moment. So I think what Eddie has done with this team selection, yes, Johnny Hill is in there based on form, as Charlie says, rightly so. He's been up there as one of the best locks in the country. But he's sort of, if you look at the background, no room for Jack Willis, who could well be in there, but he's gone with, you know, Curry, Underhill and Vunipola. And that just shows he's sticking to tried and tested methods. And I think that probably applies for Youngs at 9 and Farrell at 10. So I think he wants to get this job done first, get that bonus point, put the pressure on Ireland, who who go to Paris on Saturday, and then maybe in the Autumn Nations Cup, we will see those guys who have really been performing well in the Premiership get their opportunity on the international stage. I hope that is the case. I know Eddie in the past hasn't really done that, but I hope sort of these block of games between now and December, we do get to see those uncapped guys make a real impact.
And I saw a shake of the head when Jack Willis was mentioned there.
I'll come to you as I said. I just got to say, in the scrum half point, I think Willie Hines, obviously I'm biased, I know Willie's a friend, he's been my captain at Gloucester. I think he's maybe the most underrated player in the country. He's excellent, and he's also probably the best captain I've played under as a club captain. He's incredible. Now, he's obviously a very different player to a Dan Robson or Ben Spencer or even Ben Youngs. They're different sorts of players, but actually when you come to just game control and game management, I think he's probably the best nine in the country. I really do. Now, whether it then comes to what sort of balance you want with your two nines in the squad, and I'm not going to tell you Jones how to do his job, he does it a lot better than I ever could, but I just think what shocked me was I understand going Youngs, Hines, Robson as your three. I get that. It's when Willie's got injured, unfortunately, and Alex Mitchell's the next cab off the rank. Now, Alex Mitchell's a great player, don't get me wrong, but I just think Ben Spencer has been the form scrum half since the restart. I just don't know if I was him, I'd just be confused as to what I had to do if I'm not even in the top four scrum halves in the country at this moment. I just wouldn't know what I had to do.
Yeah, I think you're right, Charlie. I think his move to from Saracens was obviously possibly enforced because of the relegation, but he's gone to Bath going, right, this is my chance now. I'm going to be the starting nine. He's obviously been interchanging with Wigglesworth at Sarries and he goes, well, this is my chance to be the starting nine, getting Eddie's eye line. And you're absolutely right. I don't know what else he has to do. He performed well. He's a key member of that Bath side who started, I think, sixth or seventh when rugby restarted to get them into the top four.
I think on the Jack Willis point as well, I think it's the same. Like, he couldn't be any better form if he tried. His problem is that after, it seems, for years and years and years, we bemoaned not having a seven or a versatile back row in England. We've got them all now, all of a sudden. Like, you look, so it's Underhill, Curry, Vunipola are starting. You look at the names that aren't involved there. You look, there's no room for Lewis Ludlam. There's no room for Ben Earl. There's no room for Jack Willis. That is just near the top of my head. So, actually, yeah, Jack Willis has been phenomenal since coming back. I think I saw a stat, you boys probably know more. He's got more turnovers individually than two of the Premiership sides having the whole season or something ridiculous like that. Like, he's the new rules and the new way the breakdown is being reffed is playing into his hands enormously. He's taken advantage of that and made it his own. But if I was him as well, I think I'd be frustrated because what more can you do? But unfortunately, we're in a golden age of English back rowers and possession is 9/10 of the law. And Sam Underhill's got the 7 shirt. Tom Curry's got the 6 shirt. They're both phenomenal players and they both excel on the international stage. Like, I guarantee they'll both play unbelievable games on Saturday. It's one of those where it doesn't matter how well you play. If the man in the shirt is playing extremely well, it's hard to get it off him, but it does put the pressure on them that every game they've got to go out and deliver, because if they don't, the world, I know Eddie doesn't look at the media, but the media will be hounding for when does Jack Willis get his go. It's a lovely problem to have if you're English, isn't it? Like, oh God, look at all these amazing back rows we've got. Oh no. But you do feel for the individuals who get left out because there isn't much more they could be doing.
Yeah. And I suppose actually you mentioned something there that's quite, you know, a bit of a talking point. The new breakdown rules, what was like the level in difference to what you were used to as opposed to what the refs were actually blowing for?
I think obviously you can't roll or crawl now on the floor, which is getting used to, because for so long you are, when it was legal, you are coached on the floor 360 roll because it's hard to get on the ball. So I think it's getting out of that habit. Mate, you talk to the wrong man when it comes to Jacqueline. I am not getting over the ball in Jacqueline, am I? So you talk to the wrong man.
There was one against Saracens.
No,
there was one against Saracens.
No, that's right. I'm gonna pull back the curtain here. I didn't actually make that turnover. Someone else did, and I just picked it up. So it looked like I did.
No, you did it.
I made the turnover and pulled out, and I picked it up. So I didn't make that. I'll pull back the curtain now. I'll admit that now. I saw you tweet about it, Joe. You were like, what a turnover, Charlie. And Mark Best replied, go and he'll never shut up about it. I haven't spoken about it once. It wasn't me. So from a Jacqueline point of view, the big one for me is, I think, clearing breakdowns now, if you're in the side or off your feet, you aren't getting any leniency from the refs, which is quite right, because I think it got to a point where it was getting dangerous, some of the angles people were being allowed to clear out from. And it just wasn't giving Jacklers a single chance. And I think if you do get isolated or someone makes a great tackle and someone can get over the ball, you should be rewarded in rugby. I think that's part of the game. So I think I like them. I know a lot of sevens really, really like them. But I think it's good. I think it's made for more interesting games because you've got to be more accurate and you're clear. And if you're not, you're getting punished. I think at the start, the refs were maybe a little whistle happy with it in the first few rounds of the Premiership. But I think by the time we've got to the final, etc., I think we've got the balance about right, and hopefully that'll carry on through these international games.
Definitely. And Chris, I'm gonna go into a bit more of a technical point with Charlie again, because something that I saw popping up on my phone when the England squad was announced, they said that in terms of the line out, there's only really two jumpers available with Johnny Hill and Mario Toji, because you know Tom Curry's put on a bit of weight, as and Sam Underhill, you know, he's never been the lightest chap. So do you worry about that aspect of the game for England?
If I was calling lineouts for England, what a strange world that would be. Ideally, I'd have one taller, more stereotypically athletic back rower, because it just gives you another option. But I think a lot of the time people get maybe a bit caught up on, oh, he's only 6'2", so we can't use him in the lineout. Well, actually, no, we can, because if we get two props, or if we get a second row and a prop, so if we get a second row 6'7", as his back lifter throwing him and catching on his hamstrings, he's still getting as high. Yes, ideally you want to be taller in a lineout, it helps. But actually, if you get a good lifters and you get a good jump, then it's not really an issue. And also, if you call well and use movements and get them into space, it doesn't matter if you've got my grandma jumping, if it's free and you're unmarked, as long as they catch it, you're fine. So I think, yes, ideally you'd have a Courtney Laws S6, who is going to be an unbelievable, world-class lineout operator in an ideal world. But actually, you've got two of the best lineout jumpers in the world in Itoje and Hill straight away. Tom Curry, we've seen using a lineout, and is an effective option. Yes, Sam and Billy Vunipola aren't so, but actually, you can play most of your rugby off five man, and if you work your movements well enough, you'll get people to space. That it doesn't make too much of a difference as long as you work it efficiently. And also, you look at the pros you get elsewhere in the game, having Curry and Underhill on the pitch together with Billy carrying the ball, then actually, yeah, you do trade off maybe one less world-class jumping option for three or four more turnovers a game. So it's how you want to play the game. I wouldn't be too concerned. I'm sure people have discussed it. And like you say, they can use Curry when they need to. And they've got two of the best in the world in their second rows. And I'm sure they'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, of course. Chris, you spoke to Seb Negri the other week, as I remember. How was he ahead of like kind of this spell of games we're going to be having?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was spoken before they visited Dublin last weekend. And I think what has been quite underlying theme when I've spoken to Seb is it is a project. They are working towards something, and for anyone outside of that Italian camp, they may just say, well, hang on a minute, they've lost, what is it, 26 games now in a row in the Six Nations. They picked up the wooden spoon in numerous years in recent times, and it's thinking, well, where are they actually going with this? But there is a vision there, and I think we did kind of see glimpses of that against Ireland on Saturday. I know the scoreline probably doesn't reflect that 50-17, but there's a lot of young players making their debut. And what Seb said was, that Franco, who's obviously now the main coach after him being the interim head coach, they've got a vision of bringing these younger players through. And I think what they are focusing on is something that Conor O'Shea spoke about, which is getting the Italian game right first in the Pro 14 and then bringing that through to the international stage. And what Seb was keen in saying is, yeah, that is definitely improving. You know, at Benetton, I think they played Ulster and Leinster, I think, in the first 2 weeks of the Pro 14 and performed really well. And that for Seb, that was a major step forward. They might have lost both games, but they're giving Leinster a run for the money. They're giving Ulster a hard challenge. And I think that's what Seb said, is the talent coming through is great at the moment. Hopefully it'll be replicated on the international stage. And when you hear that, you kind of have a little bit more sympathy with them, because the results aren't looking good at the moment. I know a few people in Italian rugby said they need to get the house in order first as well, in terms of who runs the game at the top. But hopefully Franco can give them that vision to take forward. I don't expect him to pull up any trees on Sunday, on Saturday against England. I think England will be going out all guns blazing. But if Italy can maybe make small improvements in the autumn going into next year's Six Nations, then I think they'll have a bit of the pressure off them. But they have a plan there, and it might not seem like they do, but they are working towards something.
Yeah, and Charlie, you're pretty good mates with Jake Pledry. How's he been these last couple of weeks?
Yeah, he's just Jake, mate. Like, you forget, like, he's my mate Jake. I've known him for a while. And then he's, mate, I'm going to sound quite old by him. You walk past Jake in the street and you wouldn't think anything of him. Like, and you'd see him in the gym and you wouldn't think anything of him. And then he gets the ball in his hands and he's probably the best ball carrier in the world at the moment. And you just look at him and you go, how do you do that? I remember speaking to him. I was like, mate, when you go on like one of these pinball runs where you bounce about 12 people off in a row, I was like, do you know what you're doing? He was like, mate, I'll be honest with you. I hit the first contact and then I have a vague idea of where the line is. Like, if I see someone, I just hit them on the way. And it's phenomenal. Like, I was chatting to Tom Hudson about it the other day. There's some people in rugby who are world class and they can tell you exactly what they do day in, day out to mean that when they go on a pitch, they can be world class. Now, Jake does everything right. He does his stretching, he eats right, he does everything right like that. Don't get me wrong there. But actually, if you try to ask him, like I did, what he does on the pitch that makes a world-class ball carrier, he's like, mate, I just do what seems natural to me. And he's just got that natural gift of like being incredible when it comes to carrying the ball. He also has incredible work rate. You look at the number of carries and tackles he gets through a game. It's astronomical. It's phenomenal. He's great. He's good. He's got a good grasp of the Italian language now, which is helping him in camp. I joke telling him that he's obviously seen off Sergio Parise now and that Sergio won't get his goodbye because Jake's got the 8 shirt. And he goes, no, Sergio will be back for his goodbye, I'm sure. But we have Lapa. No, he's good. And obviously, there's a real strong southwest of England, in particular Hartbury and Gloucester Vale. That's good because you've got Cal Brayley out there now, obviously, playing for Treviso. For Benetton, sorry, and playing for Italy. You've got Seb, who's Hartbury, is out there. You've got Jake, who's Gloucester, and then obviously young Steve Varney has just been picked because I think it's his mum or grandma. I can't remember. I was chatting to him. Yeah. Full Italian as well. So there's a real connection to Gloucester and Hartbury, which is hilarious. But I think, like Chris said, they've got some, those four names are used there, and then loads of them, they've got some really good young players. I think it's the thing that's frustrating if you're an Italian fan is it seems like for the last 5 years we've been having the same conversation of we've just got to get it right, we're just developing still. And you're like, well, how long can we be doing this? Because we're missing a generation of talent while we're trying to get our house in order. So let's say hopefully Franco's the right man to do it, because I think they've got a very exciting squad there. But you just, like you say, you kind of just you roll your eyes and laugh and go, well, that's Italy, they're never going to quite get it. But fingers crossed they do. I think they have, like you said, they've got the right players there, the right player pool. It's just getting the house in order behind the scenes. But no, Jake's good. He was excited to get back out there and get back on the international stage.
I think, sorry, Joe, as well, just on that I think Jake wasn't allowed to play his game either by Ireland, which possibly didn't help Italy last weekend. They were so intense in defence. And I think Seb made one break, I think, when they nearly scored at Italy straight at the start of the game. But Jake couldn't really enforce himself on the game, which was disappointing for him and disappointing for Italy. And just one thing I want to ask Charlie while we've got rugby royalty here is with
you absolutely do not have rugby royalty here.
Well, for TRU you definitely rugby royalty. Just on the sort of the Gloucester theme and bringing it back to England, obviously Ollie Fawley's in the squad, he's on the bench. And we talked about all the different players there at Gloucester who can have an impact. I mean, what have you seen from Ollie? I think from us, he's just an absolute whiz kid. Can take any defenders on, score from anywhere. And do you think that will possibly help England if they are potentially chasing a game 50, 60 minutes in?
Yes, I've known Ol since we were, I think, 17. We played in the age groups together. I think he's a year younger than me, but he's playing up. So Ol is genuinely one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He has the stereotypical posh English accent. He's known as an old chap at the club because he's a morning old chap. But no. Ol's excellent. His nickname as well is 110 because he has no level of commitment that isn't 110% in everything. To the point where he's coach's nightmare because you're doing a team run. It's like, Ollie, stop tackling people. It's a team run. Like, calm down. I'm over the moon for Ol because in the last two seasons, I think he's been one of the four wingers in the Premiership. Like, he broke the Gloucester try scoring record this season, didn't he? He's just unbelievable. He's strong, quick, powerful. He's always been those things, but at the difference I saw in Ollie from my first stint at Gloucester to my second, so those 2 years I was away, is how he's gone away and worked on maybe the softer skills of his game, which was maybe where he was slightly lacking before. I think you're seeing these reaping rewards of that, of fingers crossed, touch wood, he'll get on the weekend and make his England debut. So he's gone from just being this raw, powerful, quick, athletic prospect to the all-round rugby player now. And there won't be many people who could play for England that will have more people happy for them than Ollie Thorey this weekend. Everyone at Gloucester, everyone around here will be over the moon for him. He is Cheltenham royalty. Talk about royalty. He is royalty in Cheltenham. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of, I was going to say Prosecco, we're in Cheltenham. There'll be a lot of the finest champagne raised to Ollie Thorey on Saturday if he gets on that pitch to make his England debut.
Yeah, and just as a fun bit of trivia, who is Ollie related to in the England changing room?
I have no idea.
I just Googled it to make sure I was right. So I actually, it's okay. He's related to Maro Itoje.
How?
Hang on, let me just get this correctly. His grandfather remarried a Nigerian woman who is the Saracens Lock's aunt.
Wow. Well, that is a great bit of trivia. You are. 10 points to Joe.
Thank you. I need all the points I can get. So obviously that's that game. And then the thing is, what's really interesting about this weekend is that the last two games on Saturday have such a bearing on what is going to happen with the championship. So if England basically need to get a bonus point win, I think that's all pretty obvious. That's pretty straightforward. And what needs to happen is in the France-Ireland game is that Ireland need to beat France for England to win the Six Nations, but Ireland cannot get a bonus point win.
If Ireland get a bonus point win, do Ireland win it?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. But if Ireland don't beat France, France win it. So if France beat Ireland, France win it.
Only if England don't pick up a bonus point win. Because it'll come down to points difference.
I think I'm on this.
We should have a list in front of us telling exactly what the permutations are, but I like this method better. Yeah. Just making it a lot
more engaging. That's not my job.
Me and Chris actually talked about this on Monday, which is why I thought I had a grasp of it. And then partway through saying it, I went, I've completely forgot what this conversation was about.
So basically, if we want to bring it home to Twickenham, we need to get a bonus point win, and we need Ireland to beat France without a bonus point. So if Ireland win 6-3 in a shocker and we get a bonus point, we're buzzing.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Well, that is the summary.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the teams have been released. France yet again have gone pretty strong after a strong performance against Wales last weekend. What a win that was.
They did look very good.
Antoine Dupont, just unplayable at nine.
Mate, he made me, he won't remember. He's same age as me. Oh no, he's a bit younger, but was playing up age groups. So we went out to France to play him at 18s. And there was this talk of this wonder kid playing nine. And we watched over for it, and he scored about four tries in the last two games, like shown and going. And all we spoke about was, don't take his dummy at guard. Don't do it, because he's going to go for it. Amazingly, it wasn't me who was susceptible to it. I won't name names of who it was, but it was the second row I played in the Leicester Academy with. He now plays for Dragons, and his name rhymes with Row Raxaru, which there isn't many names that do. Anyway, Mr. Raxaru took the dummy twice in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
Look at me going, why did I take it? We spoke about it. I'm like, I know. He did, and he scored. Thanks for that.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Yeah, but he's definitely probably the world's best nine at the moment. Maybe Aaron Smith's been pretty good.
He's definitely in the conversation. He's probably on form. You'd struggle to find many playing better than him currently.
For sure.
I think the half-back pairing is probably up there, though, as number one in the world at the moment, potentially.
I'm just trying to think.
I mean, Entomat was, but I don't think he missed one kick, did he, last weekend against Wales? I think he was pretty much on the money. I think probably what helps them is the fact that, you know, they play club level together. I'm not sure there's many in the world that can possibly say, I might could be completely wrong when I say that, but the fact they've got that synergy between 9 and 10 is something that they're definitely benefiting from at the moment.
Yeah, definitely, because obviously Johnny Sexton and Connor Murray don't play together. But they, I think they're, I mean, unless it's been announced otherwise, obviously that game is going to have huge bearings on what happens with England's championship hopes. I suppose, who are we backing to get it sorted this weekend? And we'll start off with you, Chris.
I'm going to go England, based on the fact that Ireland's record in France is so bad. I know they got the win the other couple of years ago in a section drop goal. And you know, I think that's one side of it. I think also going to France and getting his bonus point is incredibly difficult in his own way. And I think the Ireland have played France at not the best time as well. This is a French team which seems to be full of confidence. Obviously, the Scotland result didn't go the way because of ill discipline once again. But this is a side that, you know, is done extremely well in the Six Nations. They seem to have just forgotten about sort of the World Cup and how they, you know, exited that because of another bit of ill discipline. You know, they've got the coaching team together. Sean Edwards is there. And they just seem like a team with a plan now. And they just seem invigorated by the fact they've got the World Cup, don't they? In well, 3 years' time now. So I think it's going to be tough for Ireland to get the bonus point, which is why I don't think they'll do it. And I think England will have no problem getting the maximum against Italy on Saturday afternoon, evening, or whenever it kicks off.
Charlie's thoughts?
I need to clear something up on the stipulations again. If we get a bonus point and France win with a bonus point, do we win it?
I think it comes down to points difference, which currently is England have a 2 better points difference than France.
All right, I'm going to say France win it.
Ooh.
I reckon England will get a bonus point against Italy, no problem. Well, I say no problem. I think it'll be cagey. I reckon they'll just get a bonus point. I don't think it'll be a trouncing. I think the French will get a bonus point against Ireland. And I think they'll just do enough to get it on points difference. But saying that, obviously England could go and... It depends how Italy shape up, doesn't it? If England go and win by 50-odd points, then France aren't doing that against Ireland. But I think England will win by maybe 10 points to the bonus point, and I reckon France could do 15 to 20 points because I just think if you're all French side going out knowing that you've got to get a bonus point, you've got to win by 20 odd points, I think you're just completely in your wheelhouse of actually we're going to go and just play rugby, which is what they do better than anyone in the world, don't they? So actually, I think that could play into the hands of actually we've got to get a bonus point and we've got to win by 20 points. I think that's a French challenge that they'll love and they'll go for. So I'm going to stick my neck out and say France.
Ooh. Joe?
Oh, I wasn't expecting to be asked. I'll say Ireland. Let's just make it interesting. Ireland bonus point in France. Easy. Right. Before we go, Charlie's had a new column out on TRU that went out yesterday. Really excellent. I kind of described it in my head as a love letter to fans.
Yeah, I said to Charlie before we pressed record, Joe, that I think you're absolutely right to say that it's everyone's feeling it at the moment. And for someone to play at the top level of English rugby, like Charlie, to come out and pretty much say the feelings that everyone is thinking, I think it just resonated with so many people. And that's not just rugby. I know Charlie managed to get Liverpool in there, which is always a bonus for me when I'm reading through stuff. But he is a fan. You know, he's a top player, but he's also a fan. And that's what came across really well for me in the piece. Sorry, Charlie, I jumped in there.
I was just going to say, when I started writing it, it was meant to be how a piece to Joe was just a behind-the-scenes day-to-day of what it was like playing with COVID. I started writing it, and I was talking about the tests and the gloves in the gym and masks for line-outs. And I was like, this is all... Things have all been differences, but nothing was too major. It just hit me then more than like the thing that I've missed most about playing pro has been having the fans there. So whether it's 20,000 at King's Home or 2,000 at Stade Santander with Jersey, or probably funny if it's 500 on Monday night in the A-League, like I've been extremely fortunate of that. My three clubs have been Leicester, Gloucester and Jersey. All three have phenomenal fan bases who... it's more than just a sport. It's more than a Saturday to them. They want, if they see you, in the street on a Tuesday. You're there for half an hour chatting to them. That's just the way it is. That's part of being a player for these clubs. And sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's a little bit frustrating because you're like, oh, I really need to get to the post office. But I will talk to you about the lineup that I lost on Saturday. You're going to want to talk about that. But I just miss, after games, that feeling of chatting to the fans, like you, the energy you get when you can feel that you've done something, you've been a part of a result that's going to make their week. They're going to be happy for the next week. They can go into work on Monday with their head held high because there's a Bristol fan who works opposite them and you've just beaten Bristol. Like, I just miss that buzz, that energy, that those conversations, those in the clubhouse after, having a beer, having a chat. I miss these things. And I think we've all been aware of how much the fans miss being there. But I think I just wanted people to know, like, I can only speak 100% for myself, but we've spoken about enough in the change room. Like, we as players, God, we miss the fans as well. We miss them so much. And people talk about Anfield's 12th man, you talk about King's Home 16th, people think, oh, it really isn't. Like, having 20,000 and the shed roaring behind you, it makes a difference when you go to those dark moments. And I think you've seen that, you know, across all sport, but particularly rugby and football, there's been some crazy results and crazy scores. And I do think not having the fans there has played a huge part in that. And I said in my column, I'm not going to get into the financial side of it because there's huge financial implications for all sports, all levels, not having the fans in. But purely on a person-to-person basis, I miss dearly having the people in there, having the cheers, having the boos, having that laugh with the fans. Like, I miss it so much. And the sooner we can get back to 10% capacity, 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever percent capacity we can get to, it's going to make a difference financially, but more importantly, emotionally to people. That's fans and players. So I think the government are reviewing it on the 9th of November. That's when they are. I said the frustration comes from, you see pictures of socially distanced crowds watching plays and performances. And I'm a huge fan of musical theatre. I'm over the moon for the arts that they're getting people in because they need it. They really need that. I don't understand why we can't at sport as well. We're outside. Surely it's safer. If that's safe, the way safe, I want everyone to have fans back. I want every industry to be financially helped by having fans back. I want people to go and do what they enjoy because this year's been horrible and we need to get back to what we enjoy. It's important to be happy and we've got to do what we can to make each other happy. Let's just get the fans back in. Ethan Waller wrote about it in his column recently. Like, let's do it safely. But I was there the night that Gloucester had the trial with 1,000 in and it worked without a hitch. And that was in just one section. They did it in 10% of the ground so they could then roll out 10,000 around the ground was the plan. And it went without a hitch because fans are self-policing. Like, if you haven't got your mask on, one of the fans saying, oh, put your mask on, because they know that if you don't, they might not be able to come next week and they're going to do whatever it takes to come next week. So I just really hope that they review it and that by the time the next Premiership season rolls around and when, if and when the Championship starts and the National League starts, that we can have fans there because we just miss it so much.
I don't know if you saw as well that there's something on Twitter about a video going around of Legoland with loads of people just sat just around that. Like, I was like, yeah, great, these injuries are happening, but these people at Legoland are watching some show at Legoland. How is that different to getting fans into King's Home or fans around the country? It's just, I think for us, because we all love sport, we are so frustrated that we can't go and watch our favourite teams, but you can go and visit Legoland. I think that's, you know, it's just, that's the frustration for me, but I don't think I could sum it up better than what Charlie's done there, to be fair.
No, not at all. And obviously, you can read Charlie's column on TRU now. Chris, what else have we got going up towards the end of this weekend?
It's been a busy couple of weeks. We've obviously got a couple of things from England. Eddie Jones, Henry Slade and Owen Farrell spoke today just about sort of obviously the squad announcement, how they see the game going. It's a lot of talk around Henry Slade, which was nice. So that should be going up. We should have something with Sean Edwards as well. Fingers crossed. Ahead of France, Ireland. You've got World 10 as well, Joe, haven't you, coming up?
Yeah, speaking to some... Well, I don't know what's going to be going out when, but basically I'm speaking to DTH Van der Moer, who's playing for the Miami Suns. Then I'm also speaking to Westcliff's Jake Campy, as well as Ben Seymour, who plays for the Ohio Aviators, as well as Seattle Seawolves in Major League Rugby. And then also later on today, which is the day we record, which is Thursday, there's a piece going out with John Mitchell, Tom Curry, and Charlie Ewells about the battle of the forward pack, essentially, as it is. So, yeah, that's kind of what's going to be going on for the next, you know, couple of days on TRU. We'll see when they all go out. Chris has also had, you know, he's been speaking to Warren Gatlin this week. There's been loads of stuff going on. Eddie Jones, I think, the other day as well. So it's been going well. And that's all going to be available for everyone to read on Talking Rugby Union across the weekend. I'm sure we'll be resharing it all with the weekend coming up that we have got. And I suppose that's all that's left to say is, Charlie, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers, lads. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, Chris, I'll probably be speaking to you in the next couple of days anyway. So I'll speak to you when I speak to you then. And thank you very much for listening to this Talking Rugby Union podcast. I've been Joe Harvey. Goodbye.